It's time for some Monday morning quarterbacking here on News Talk 1400 DWS. You can reach us at 356-9397. You can text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line at 351-5357. Or you can email us at talk@wdws.com. Now, here are the Monday morning quarterbacks, Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our Monday morning quarterback session. We'll be here for the next couple of hours. We got plenty of things to talk about today. This is that time of year when all these things run together. The football season for some teams is over, but a lot of football yet to be played. Basketball just picking up. Volleyball last night, they named the 64 teams, which included the University of Illinois and seven other Big Ten teams. We could talk about all those. Mr. Tate, I'd like to start with you today talking about the situation with the coaches. I read this morning that the payoff, estimated now, nobody knows for sure, but the payoff for the ones who have been fired so far is $60 million.
Is that all?
I thought it'd be more.
Well, it will be before, because are you including the assistant coaches? Are you including the athletic director that got fired?
Well, you know Mora got $12 million, wasn't it? So yeah. That was a big part of that. I thought the number was a little low. But it's $60 million. We have to pay them for doing a bad job.
$60 million for doing it. They could retire and just take the money. It's amazing.
And how about what happened down at Tennessee?
That's about as bad as it gets. We've let Twitter run our world, haven't we?
Twitter and young student dissidents on campuses have been leading the way.
Well, don't you think that the Twitter helped to organize them? I mean, to bring them together, you know?
Well, sure, that's all you have to do. You know, before we had social media, to organize a group of any size took a lot of telephone calling.
Oh, yeah.
It took a lot of getting people together. Now you just put it on there one time. You know,
and
you want to join.
Just think of the power that they now feel they have.
Well, they do.
And how are you going to hire a coach? Mm-hmm. How are you going to hire anyone satisfactory to the dissenters? I don't know if you can. At Tennessee, I don't know if you can, because they had other ideas in the last several weeks. They're talking about other things, and now all of a sudden you're hiring an assistant coach from Ohio. They don't want an assistant coach. They want a successful head coach to come to Tennessee. How do you do that?
And they claim that this coach had was related in some way to the activities of Sandusky.
No proof of that at all.
No proof at all, and no evidence of whatsoever.
Never yet. Even heard anything before, have you?
No. Never heard that story before.
Not even a hint.
Well, that's one thing we can talk about today, the changes in the coaching situation, and I've lost track of how many. Do you know what it is?
I don't know the number, no.
It's 18 or so.
Arizona State's open now. I mean, we know about Arkansas, we know about Florida, we know about, and everybody's making fast moves. I mean, they're trying to. Everybody's trying to beat everybody else to the punch. And Frost, I don't know, what do you do if you're the coach at Central Florida and you're...
You go someplace right now. I want to tell you that we've talked about this before, but you remember when Mike White was so hot?
Yeah.
And everybody wanted Mike White, and Mike kind of wanted to hang around here for a while because he said, well, I'm not finished with what I'm doing here. And then... he wasn't quite so hot. And by the time he left here, he was not hot at all.
Well, of course, once he got in NCAA problems, that really hurt him.
Well, that's what I'm saying, but I'm saying Frost, now's the time to go.
Yeah, unless you think you got things going so well at Central Florida, you stay there. I mean, it wouldn't be the worst thing that ever happened.
No.
Because you're going to win games in that league. He's going to be dominant, right? I think in Florida, you got talent. If you go to Nebraska... You got to find players from some place other than Nebraska, okay? And obviously it would be Florida. And now you're recruiting against other teams that have a step up on you in Florida, because Nebraska is not what
is the money the same.
The Nebraska that you remember is not the Nebraska that the 18-year-old kid knows about.
Right. Is the money the same? I mean, can,
oh no, money be more money at Nebraska.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, I don't. Is I mean, after you got after you're making several million, does it make that much difference?
Most people move.
Keep
for,
doing it, don't they?
They move for more money all the time.
You're right. They do.
We're at 356-9397. Our Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357.
Let me mention one that didn't. Phew, at Gonzaga.
Yes.
Is there a bet? Now, I bet you could make more money somewhere else. But why would he leave there? Would you leave there if you were if you had what he's got going?
No, I like Gonzaga. I'd like to be there myself. I would. Wouldn't you like to report a team like that every year? Because they bring guys in from all over the world, for one thing, and they win.
Yeah.
They're in the top 25.
I got to give Brian Barnhart and O'Donnell credit. They just stay optimistic right through the worst we've ever seen, right? 10 more losses in a row. Do you know out of the last 10 losses, I think we've had one game that hasn't been decided by double figures. And the average going into Saturday's game, the average margin of defeat for Illinois was 17 points on average. I mean, we've had some games where we had one game where we won by 7 and a couple games where we were 10 or 11. But most of the games have been much more. And after Saturday, I'd say the average would at least have gone up to 18 or 19. On average. I mean, we're not in the games at the end. The thing that kills you isn't just the result on the field, it's what's taking place in the stands. I was told at the end of that game there weren't more than 20 people in the West stands. 20!
Somebody
they got a picture of it. I mean,
somebody counted the students. I heard call on that too.
Yeah, I counted the students. There were 80 students there for the national. While the national anthem is being played, I'm counting the students.
Okay.
And there were 80, and there were about 100 at halftime, which the card section just didn't exist, obviously.
So at peak time, when there was the largest crowd, what was it?
Oh, I don't know, Jim, because I can't see the west side from the press box. I don't know what the west side looked like. The east side, of course, let's just put it this way. They sold 30,000 tickets. What do you think? 10 or 15,000 didn't come? I don't know. I don't know the number.
All right, that's another thing we can talk about. We've got basketball to talk about as well. The Illinois basketball team, the men's team, is undefeated, and they leave later today for Winston-Salem and Wake Forest team that has not been very good. This is a good break for the Illini to get a team in that shape for your first road game, because you never know how all these young guys are going to react in their first road game, but at least we're not playing Duke or somebody.
What we're seeing is the first games played away from home are usually a big problem for everybody.
Yep.
For teams everywhere, it's just it's the familiarity is gone, and the baskets are a little different. And I mean, they're the same height and they're the same dimensions, but it's still different. And you got different crowd feeling, and for some reason we're seeing it. I mean, I'm seeing it in football too. I mean, where did Alabama and Auburn play? Obviously, and they played at Auburn. You know, I mean, if you look at the big upsets, where did Ohio State lose to Iowa? Mm-hmm. At Iowa. I mean, there are a lot of big losses that were, when you say they were surprises, first thing you do is check where they're played. It's not 100%, but there's a number. That's where you start looking for problems.
That's what the odds makers look for. That's
absolutely
one of the first things. Where's this game going to be played?
Well, Michigan got out 14-0 on Ohio State at home before Ohio State just basically took over the game.
Let's take a call. Let's go to Alan. Good morning, Alan.
Morning, guys. I was at the football game for a while Saturday. Lauren, I don't know what you think, but I think we need a new offensive coordinator. I know it's probably not going to happen, but boy, some of the calls that was made in that game just really hurt me quite a bit. Like first half, we was on the 48-yard line, had third down and less than one, and we tried to go wide both times and lost yardage. Both times. You mean we couldn't go straight ahead to get the yard to get a first down and same old
I think
old
the answer that's probably
had.
No. You know, I don't know. I don't know what. You know, nothing seems to work. They've tried everything. When you're getting beat up front,
kept doing the option read, and it worked on the first drive pretty good. But then they figured it all out, and they had 11 people up in the box on a lot of plays. They just dared us throw the ball.
Wouldn't you?
I mean, literally dared us throw the ball.
Yeah.
And then on defense, you could tell every time when they're going to use the jet sweep. They put two guys on one side, and then they move them to the other side and have our defenders follow them over there. And that's it. Here comes that running back. As soon as they snap it, they give it to him, and there's nobody on the right side to stop it at all within 10 yards. And I'm not an expert, but if I can see it up there, why can't the coaches see that? I mean, it's just astounding.
I don't have an answer for you. I just think that when you're getting beat at most every position, I think it doesn't matter what you do. I mean, the score was 42-7. You can't go back and start talking about a few plays here and there. I mean,
this is before we got blown out.
Every game starts like a boxing match. You don't blow somebody out in the first minute. I mean, it's just a matter of time. Every game has a trend, and the trends by the second half are all against Illinois because they're getting beat everywhere.
Well, yeah, but I mean, let's talk about first half because I left after it was 21-7 after we gave up the fumble. And
well, the games aren't decided in the first half. I mean,
I understand that. What I'm saying is I could see the plays before they even happened. If I can see it, why can't they? I mean, it was obvious what was going to happen.
I do believe that we got a pattern on offense going there that we never gave up. And
exactly.
Well, yeah, the QB hands off to the running back or he doesn't. That's basically the running attack. And then when we got so far behind, then it was all passing, and I didn't have anything wrong. You know, I didn't have any complaints with that because what else are you going to do? But
we got two really good receivers in Spalding and Dorsey, and we don't have anybody to get the ball to him. I mean, Thomas can throw the ball, but he's not accurate. I mean, he's either low or high or somewhere. He's got a good arm, but he needs a lot of passing skills, and he can run. He's a good runner. We got some talent. It's just getting the right people at the right place. And now basketball. I like the way we're playing. Thank goodness for Aaron Jordan and Kipper Nichols playing our most improved players playing well. But I'm really concerned about Mark Smith shooting. I mean, it's getting worse instead of better. And we got to have him. And I don't know if that's
Well, what do you
happen.
Mean in five games, six games, you've decided that? That his shooting is getting
worse? I can see what's happening.
This guy's a freshman.
You can tell by his shooting, his body language. He doesn't even want to shoot it, but he has to, and it's way off. He's not even close now.
Okay.
The other guys are shooting pretty well, but Mark Smith is not. He had a bad game that last game. He was not good.
Well, he hasn't shot well. That's true from the perimeter, but he's a freshman. In watching freshmen over the last 50 years, what freshman really shoots well? I mean, if you go back and check the free throws by a senior in high school and take him to the freshman year in college, it's the same distance, it's the same hoop, everything's the same except his shooting percentage falls off 100%, or not 100%, but at least 10%. If he shot 80% in high school, he'll shoot 70% in college the first year. It just takes a while.
Hey, got to go, Alan. Thank you. Appreciate your comments. Let's go to John. Hi, John.
Good morning, fellas. Went to the basketball game on Friday, and I just noticed a lot of ticky-tack fouls being called.
Yeah.
I apologize, I haven't heard an explanation for it, if there has been one, but I'm wondering if you folks know anything as to why such refereeing is going on.
I can't say other than it's just a game built for people who can penetrate with the basketball are going to draw fouls. That's as soon as there's contact, it's always the defense is moving, and therefore it's a foul on the defense. And but I think the officials are calling it close. We had 59 fouls in a game early. We had 53 fouls in another game. That's way too many. It breaks up the continuity of the game and the flow. And it's very disappointing to me, Jim. I don't like it.
I don't either. I'm ready to go home at halftime if they continue to call fouls like that. It's you know, I wonder, and would have to ask some official this, Lauren, but I wonder if there are new, you know, each year they seem to have something that we're going to look out for this year.
Well, it's the pick and roll.
The pick and roll was even last year, though, but yeah. It's even worse this year.
Yeah. They're looking for that guy moving. Go ahead.
Yeah, they always have points of emphasis for referees. And, you know, like maybe this year it's the moving pick or something like that. But it just seemed like there was so much what normal contact would be allowed that they're calling fouls on. And if that had been a Big Ten game, you know, they would. It seems like last year, even years before, you'd have bodies flying all over the place and no fouls being called. So I don't know if it's just early in the season trying to, you know, get the kids to, you know, step back a little bit, or if it's just some new thing coming down from the NCAA.
I think from a talent standpoint, we are really shy at defensively. I think we're really weak defensively as a team. I just don't. We don't have a basket protector, and I don't think we're very good at stopping penetration off the top. I think this is really going to hurt when they get against decent teams. I just don't think they're very good defensively. I don't think there's much he can do about it other than just keep working at it and try. I wonder if he'll even consider playing some zone just to stop the penetration. But I don't know what you do about it when you don't have a basket protector. Most teams in the Big Ten have a big, strong guy in the middle. Now, when a guy breaks through, he's there.
How do you like that? I like that Bagley at the Duke.
Isn't he something?
He is something. Well, thank goodness he's there for 1 year.
Yeah, the great ones are only there for 1 year.
Well, you saw Finke taking some charges in there.
Yeah, he did.
So that was nice.
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
All right.
He's improved.
Fellas, have a good day.
Thank you. Appreciate the call, sir. Tony is next. Hi, Tony.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. I thought about going downtown to watch the game against Northwestern, but then I realized that Alabama and Auburn was on at the same time, and there was just no way I could leave my living room. That was a great college football game, Alabama-Auburn. And one thing you notice, they had a lot of freshmen playing on both teams.
Yeah, there are freshmen, then there are freshmen.
Right.
You know, skill-wise. Yeah, it was a great football game. I thought Alabama made a bunch of mistakes in that game, though, didn't they? How about those snap back from center a couple of times?
Oh, yeah.
Right toward the end of the game there. The blocking back or the running back, the one standing beside the quarterback, clapped his hands a couple of times, and the center thought he was ready to snap the ball, and he did snap it. And both times, the quarterback couldn't handle it, and that was a big play, two big plays right in a row. So I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But it was a fun game to watch. And it's sad for the Illini that us Illini fans would rather sit at home and watch Alabama, Auburn, instead of go downtown to the Illini game. But the Big Ten's rivalry games just aren't as fun as the SEC's. I just got to tell you. Ohio State, Michigan's a good one. I think Iowa, Nebraska's a good one. But to me, the rest of them aren't that appealing to me. I don't know why. Maybe it's the year. But I don't know. I think Penn State needs a better rival than whoever they played. I think they played Rutgers or something. But what do you think?
Well, the problem is that once they set this thing up in the east-west alignment, you got to go with what you have. I mean, Michigan State and Penn State are kind of left out to dry in terms of a natural rivalry for the last game. And, you know, right. When you throw Rutgers, maybe Rutgers should be playing Maryland. I don't know. But I just don't know. There's too many teams in the league for me in the first place.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, why can't they schedule like their rival, even if it's not in the same league? Like Miami was playing a team. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but there was a couple teams like Clemson and South Carolina. They're not in the same division, but they're
They did that for Indiana Purdue. That's what they did. I mean, they took one from the East and one from the West. Indiana and Purdue play each other. That's now everybody else has to play from. Well, doesn't have to, but they, everybody else plays in their own division.
Oh, I got you. I got you.
So there's seven teams, right. That, which makes it odd. I mean, when you got seven teams, you have to have a crossover somewhere. So the crossover in the two divisions is Indiana and Purdue.
Hey, thank you, Tony. Thanks for the call. We go to Brian. Hello, Brian.
Hello, am I on the air?
You're on the air. You're Brian?
I'm Brian. I didn't hear the beep.
There is no beep.
Hey, Jim, is this your last Monday morning quarterback
show? No. We got plenty to go.
Got plenty to go, huh? Okay. Well, I just wanted to tell you that I remember years ago when I was watching high school basketball down at, when you were in Springfield, the IHSA Basketball Network, I thought, man, there's a good young announcer, you know, and I think you were on there with Jack Burmaster or somebody. I can't remember who, but...
Are you talking about the television broadcast?
The television broadcast, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Who were you on with, Jim?
Several guys... It varied, but the main ones were the Jack Drees and those people.
Oh, Jack Drees, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought, man, there's a good announcer, and I really enjoyed listening to Larry Stewart and Ray Elliott do the football games, and all of a sudden he lost his job, and I thought, man, they need to hire that Jim Turpin up here. And about that fast, here you came. And I just wanted to say that you've done an admirable job, and I've enjoyed listening to you and Lauren for most of my life, and it's not going to be the same when you're gone, and I just wish you luck in your retirement, and, you know, good job, Jim.
Okay, you're very kind, Brian. I appreciate it very much, and I'd talk to you longer here, but we got several people that want to talk and try to take one more before the news coming up. This is Daryl. Hello, Daryl.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. I was reading yesterday's. I don't know where you, I don't have the radio on, so I don't know what you've had on earlier. I was calling to comment on the last six lines of Mr. Tate's column in yesterday's paper.
Okay, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing that I've read in the News Gazette in almost 3 years that I agree with. And that's what somebody finally came out with the feelings that I feel on the football coach. And I truly believe I spend the winters in Florida. And I truly believe if you would have called down to Tampa first, they would give you $30 million to get him out of the state. And so I just don't agree with your football coach at all. That's all I have to say.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate your call. Right.
Well, he's referring to the article in USA Today where they had an opinion piece that they decided that they picked the five worst contracts in the country football coaching.
That wasn't something you wrote. You just repeated.
No, it was just something. I was just citing the fact that how we feel locally is one thing. How people feel about Illinois as they look at us from afar or as they look at us from on the national scene, we're really way down. In everybody's estimation, I don't know anybody that feels positive about Illinois outside of Josh and the people that support Josh.
You see all those quotes from the people that were asked. I don't know who wrote that or who repeated that, but had to do with what do you think of the Illinois basketball team? And mm-hmm. where are they ranked? And most of them said, well, they're not even on my flow chart yet until they play somebody. And mm-hmm. that was time after time after time.
Same thing.
Same thing.
Same thing you're thinking, same thing I'm thinking.
Well, you know, mm-hmm. same thing I said at the beginning of, you know, the fun starts now.
Sure.
Hopefully.
Yeah, and we won't really know after Wake Forest. I mean, if you lose to Wake Forest, you know you're not very good. Mm-hmm. But because Wake Forest is not very good.
Well, we got
good.
Northwestern right after that.
You bet.
Then we on the road, then we got a game at home against Maryland.
Yep.
Right after that. So I said after those three games that we should know a little more about this team.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
We got some callers waiting, but it is indeed 9:30 and the time for the news headlines with Brian Barnhart. We'll come back after that and continue with our Monday morning quarterback. Here is Brian. And welcome back to our Monday morning quarterback session. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate here, taking your calls at 356-9397. The Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. And Al is next. Thanks for holding on, Al.
Yeah, I had to call on your last day, Jim. I just
no, this isn't my last day. I don't know where people got that idea.
Well, in it Monday morning quarterback, though, your last day?
No, my last day is December 22nd, so there's a couple more Mondays in between there and now. But anyway, say whatever you want to say.
Anyway. How dare Al from Montrose complain about the offensive coordinator?
Anyway. Tate was getting ready to take him on, but then he eased off.
Well, it's a hard thing to argue from my standpoint. But I mean,
let me just say this: I sat with a Missouri Valley football official Saturday at the game, and he said they probably would have finished in the middle of the pack in the Missouri Valley. That's not good, and. He made a couple comments about, boy, they don't do much in offense, do they? I said, well, that's kind of what I've been complaining about all year. But anyway, that's all I'll say about the coordinators. You know what I think about them. But
I think we ought to go over to Rochester and get that guy and
just make him the coordinator.
Maybe not hire him, but just take some advice from him and say, how do you do this? How do you look so great year after year after year?
Some guy called in Saturday or after the game and mentioned his name, and some guy said, oh, that's ridiculous. I said, well, let me tell you something. He knows something about football because I know people that know him as well. And they say he is an unbelievable offensive mind. But, yeah, for him, for people not to think he couldn't be a good offensive coordinator, I think they're crazy.
Well, you know, but anyway. I want to throw something out here. I listened to the guy talking about the Purdue game against Indiana. And praising Brohm for all the, quote, trick plays and the long bombs that he got away with in that game. And I think he makes the game fun for Purdue. I think he does. I think, he took over a dead program, okay? Purdue was dead. And they hired him, and he's lifted them. They're doing something right over there
in the bowl game.
That was my next comment. We lack toughness, we lack passion, and the kids aren't having fun. I mean, you can tell by their body language. It's just they're not having fun. But any jet sweeps or anything that let the kids have fun. We're 2-9. What the heck you got to lose? I mean, that's just I don't know. They got to get a whole lot tougher though. I mean, a whole lot tougher. How they do that? I guess they get in the weight room and just bust their butt but. They're not in very good position on defense a lot of times either, Lauren. And it's just anyway, I wanted to make that comment that I sat with that official and he wasn't too impressed. But anyway, thanks for the show, guys. I really enjoy it, and thanks for taking my calls all these years. So I'll hang up and listen to the rest of the show, guys.
Hey,
thanks.
We appreciate the call. We're at 356-9397, and text us at 351-5357. Got a lot of other things to talk about, but we got a little behind there in that first half hour. So, Ed, let's take a quick break right here, and then we'll go back to the phones. Welcome back to our Monday morning quarterback session. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate here. Well, Ohio State and Wisconsin will play Saturday for the Big Ten Championship. And this game, of course, has all kinds of implications for the selection of the Final Four. Over the weekend, I don't know how many people I heard predict how this was going to work. If this team beats this team, and not a one of them has you know, I shouldn't say they don't have a clue, but you never know what's going to happen in these.
No, and each game is dependent on what happens somewhere else,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going to happen. I think Ohio State's better than Wisconsin, but if you were going to do this thing perfectly, you would take the name off of each team and put the games up that they played, but don't let anybody know who they are.
Yeah.
The perception of Ohio State, erase that. The perception of Alabama, eliminate that. Because what you're doing is you're giving them credit for things they did in years past.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't you? I mean, that's what perception is based on what they have done at some other time, other than in addition to what they've done this year. And I think it'd be interesting to know how that would turn out. Because Ohio State does have two losses, but they're ahead of most other two loss teams in everybody's view.
Well, we've got Oklahoma that appears to be a lock.
Yeah, as long as they win.
Well.
Right?
Everybody. And how about Auburn now with two victories over number one teams?
Yeah.
And another victory over a team that was ranked number three. And now they got to go play again.
Yep.
And that game's at Georgia, I believe, isn't it?
And it's the final game. It's the most recent game that's the strongest in our thoughts. Not the Oklahoma Ohio State game, but way back there. That game was way back, you know. So now we're thinking in entirely different terms. And we remember when Ohio State, which wasn't going to go, beat Wisconsin 59-0. Remember that?
Yes.
What happened? they were picked, and they went on from there. So,
well, if you're on that selection committee, I don't know how you. Somebody was saying that I don't know what the makeup of that committee is, but some are coaches, but they're not all coaches.
Oh no, they're all.
There's a few coaches on there, and they said that they really kind of rely on. The coaches for these things that happen in let's say Iowa and Ohio State and those kind of things. I don't know why, because to me most coaches sound the same when you talk to them.
When they had the coaches picking the teams for UPI, you know who did the picking? The SIDs for those coaches.
Yeah,
because those coaches are not going to spend any time. Yeah, looking at the national scene, they're not. They're going to spend 100% of their time on the next opponent. That's the only thing that matters.
I know, but these guys are on the.
I know.
The ones they've got on there now are former coaches.
But I'm just saying that they haven't. Their background is having somebody else do it for them. That's really what. Not that they can't do a great job, but they work at it. But they didn't work at it when they were coaches, because they couldn't. I mean, they worked at their next game.
All right, we're at 356-9397. I want to talk to you about Debussy. Debussy is banking on youth with their initiative called Money Smart Youth. Money Smart Youth prepares today's youth for tomorrow's financial responsibility. Children learn the importance of money, how it's used, saved, and taxed. The fun, animated program is great for children from 5 to 10 years old. Video lessons include understanding money, ages 5 to 6, priorities, age 6 to 7, smart ways to spend, donate, and invest, ages 8 to 9, and taxes and credit, ages 9 to 10. Utilize Money Smart Youth online, free of charge, and on your schedule by visiting Debussy.com. Debussy believes in the power of financial literacy and educating children at an early age. Research reveals young people determine their attitude about handling money by the time they finish the fifth grade. A survey of parents by Networks Financial Institute found that only 57% of homes have talked about saving versus spending. Fewer than 40% discussed credit cards, loans, debt, and their own finances. And even less have talked about investing with their children. Partner with an advocate for education in our community, Debussy. Invest in your child's future with Debussy and their Money Smart Youth Initiative. Visit Debussy.com or stop by one of their many convenient locations today for solutions to your personal, business, and wealth management needs. Let's go to the phones for Steve. Hello, Steve.
Hey, Jim. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing good. Got a beautiful late November day.
Did you call to give us a weather forecast, Steve?
No. Just an observation.
Okay.
Hey, I wanted to tell you about Friday. I went to the Gibson City Merle Forsyth State Championship game, and I think that was about the finest high school game I've ever seen. Two evenly matched teams. It came down to the last minute. Gibson City won, but there was no turnovers in the game, very few penalties, and it was just excellent.
I heard a lot of people talking about that game. In fact, I heard a guy on one of the television announcers, I think it was from Channel 3, also said it was the best high school game he'd ever seen. Of course, he's a young guy. He hadn't seen many games, probably.
Yeah. Well, I'm close to 70, so I've seen a few, and it was extremely well played. Gibson City had a running back that, he was a man. I mean, he was over 6 foot and about 225, and he was a horse. And then they also had a kicker. He was tall and skinny, but he had a tremendous leg. I don't know if you've ever been to the Northern Stadium up there, but at the north end basketball practice facility or football practice facility, and there was a strong wind out of the south, but that kid kicked it clear to that building. I've never seen anything like that.
Did you stay for the Rochester game?
No, I didn't. We got there a little early and saw the end of the Tuscola game, which was a one-point game. It was an excellent game.
Yeah,
I'm
just wondering how somebody in a town the size of Rochester has a team that can win the state championship. There have been a lot of multiple winners, and, you know, somebody will win the state championship two or three times and things like that. Have they won it 7 out of 8 years? Is something like that, or they've been in the game that many times? It's amazing what they do, and it's and watching them play is a thrill, because they do.
Yeah.
You know, this year Coach Leonard beat his dad, who's a coach at Sacred Heart Griffith, and they play once every year, and usually Sacred Heart beats them because it's a much bigger school. But this year he even beat his dad. That's quite a football family.
I'm from Rod, so Jostis has always got our team in the hunt, and, you know, they played for the last 2 years for the state championship, and there's a big turnover in kids, but it's a program, and he's got a great offensive mind too. So,
well, you need to be a little creative, and some of those high school games are not much fun to watch, because it's mainly, you know, just guy handing the ball off to a real good running back, and a couple of the larger schools did a lot of that. And I like a little creativity. Let the kids have a little fun.
Yeah. In the championship game the other afternoon, Gibson City was down in the last minute, and like on a 3rd and 8 or something, they threw a pass into the end zone. Moroa had a defensive back in front of the receiver and a defensive back behind the receiver, and the quarterback led the receiver by several yards. The kid jumped and caught it in the air and there wasn't any anyway. Merle could have had a better defensive play or scheme, but Gibson City made the play when they had to.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Appreciate the call this morning. Jim is next. Hi, Jim.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We're good. What's going on with you?
Well, I have a question for Lauren, but first of all, like many others have, I'd like to thank you, Jim, for all the years that you've been here for our community. I'm also old enough to have I was listening back when Larry Stewart was doing most of the sports casting and such when I was a young man, and always enjoyed your shows and your voice at the games and your knowledge of the teams and such. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. Well, what's on your mind this morning other than that?
Well, I'd like to ask Lauren, because he's spoken about this quite often, and I've called in a couple times, and we've talked about it some, but not really hit on it in this manner. There's a huge discrepancy in the grade point average, not the grade point average, rather the...
enrollment requirements?
Yeah, exactly. The requirements for instance, going to the University of Illinois as opposed to going to Ohio State University. First of all, like, when did that start? When was it not an even, when were we not on an even ground anymore? Has it always been that way?
I would say basically yes, it's been that way. If you're a student, Ohio State's, every school's got their own requirements, and Illinois has been more rigid than everybody in the Big Ten except Wisconsin, and as far as we know, was Northwestern. But I don't know how far. When we had the bridge program, I think you were able to get students who were marginally qualified into that bridge program, and if they passed the summer program, they could get in school. But that's been gone at least 15 years, or maybe 20. I don't know how many years it's been gone. I remember when I did a story on it a couple of years ago, I was shocked how many years it had been since that program existed, and I've since forgotten how long, I don't know how long ago it was when I wrote about it, and I don't know how long ago it was when they actually had the program, but it's been a long time.
You're going to need help one of these days.
Well, I
can give you a couple of names of psychiatrists. And
I don't, it's too late. You know what, it doesn't even matter.
Well, I'm not certain how I give my grandson hope, who is, he'll be turning four soon, and if they're still playing football in college when he's that age, how do I give him any hope that if he wants to be a proud University of Illinois football player, that they, you know, how do they have a chance? When I know in the back of my mind, if I'm honest with him, you know, you really ought to be going and playing at Ohio State.
Well, just the first thing you need to do is understand that Illinois won't be playing Ohio State a lot of those years. They're in another division of the Big Ten. Illinois, quote, has a chance against some of the schools in the West Division. Like Nebraska's changing coaches right now. They've fallen from where they were. Minnesota is not an overwhelming threat. I mean, Northwestern is doable if you could ever get things going a little bit. I mean, obviously Northwestern's dominated, won 11 out of the last 15 games with Illinois, but if you're talking about Ohio State has an advantage in every single way that you can, you know, whether it's resources in the community, the money, the history, the talent in the state. I mean, they've got so many advantages that there's no way Illinois is ever going to catch Ohio State. It's not going to happen.
Right. Well, okay. I was also really perplexed when Nebraska joined the Big Ten. I guess I was out of it for a while and wasn't following college sports as much, especially football. But when I was younger, Nebraska was a college powerhouse.
Mm-hmm.
They were, and all they did, like Jim was talking about in high school ball, all they ever did was run the ball. But when you have Johnny Rogers and all these other, when you have running backs like that, what else would you do?
Well, it wasn't just the running backs. Everybody keeps saying that. It was the line. You could put any running backs back there, and with those lines, they would have still made yardage. They would have won games.
I absolutely agree there. It all starts in the trenches.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate the call. Quick break here, Mr. Baum, before the news coming up at 10 o'clock. Well, we have a couple of callers waiting, but we're in the final minute now before we need to join CBS for the news, and then a little local news after that. Then we'll have another hour, so if you'll be glad to get you on the air, if you'll just call us back after that here on WDWS in Champaign-Urbana. Welcome back to hour number two of our Monday morning quarterback session. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate here catching up on a couple of items. Let's see. Bill says on a text, President Trump would call Lovie Smith low-energy Lovie. And he asked the question, do you know if Underwood and the staff are recruiting the five-star recruit who committed to Louisville, but now they will not allow him to play?
I don't know where Brian Bowen's going, but I'm sure he's going somewhere, and I'm sure everybody's recruiting him because he's a good player.
And another text, the football team is young, undisciplined, and poorly coached. Good news, I have collected on my under of 3.5 for 3.5 wins for the season this week. Jim from Muhammad. And let's see, this is from John in Forsyth. I am tired of hearing about how we were playing so many freshmen. We should have at least brought in some JUCO players to be competitive. I have never seen such a weak-looking team. If you're going to run off or not play your upperclassmen, then you had better have some ideas on how you are going to compete.
Well, we know a couple of years ago, Beckman decided to bring in about a half a dozen junior college players. How'd that work out? And that leaves that class shy because they were only able to recruit 18 freshmen, some of whom left. So that's a really weak junior class that we have coming up. And I don't know. This is a little like Houston and the Cubs, you know. I mean, where you just start from scratch and you try to build with young people, and hopefully they've got some freshmen that'll be better. But we don't really know this. We don't really know how good these freshmen are, particularly the linemen. I think the defensive backs are pretty good. I think Hobbs is good. I think Adams ought to be good. I think they've got some hitters in the secondary. But until they shore up the line, and those are young linemen that we don't know enough about. They haven't been very successful so far.
Let's go back to the phones for John. Hello, John.
Hey, good morning, Jim and Lauren. Hey, you know, we know about the bad of the football team, but I want to talk about the good things about this. You know, these are freshmen. We've got a lot of people hurt. Give a lot of them another year. They put some meat on their bone, some muscle on their bone, put some muscle on that line. You know, once everybody get healthy, these kids tackle. If I was the head coach, I would put everything aside and say, look, you watch this Wisconsin game. You know, we didn't win the battle, but we won the war. And you look at Wisconsin, yeah, they're undefeated, but look what we did to them and build on that. Next year is going to be different. I guarantee these kids are going to turn around. At least our kids did tackle.
Well,
okay, how many games are we going to win next year?
Well, you never know. I'm not going to put money on it right now, but within 8 months, I'll let you know.
Oh, okay. At the end of next season, you'll let us know, right?
No. Back that up. Right before the season starts, I say in April, you can tell what we're going to have. And I guarantee these kids are going to turn around. And if we get this quarterback position down to a cornerstone, we got somebody that can be three-dimensional in the backfield as a quarterback. Hey, we're going to be tough. We just got to wait. Let time work its process.
All right. Appreciate it, John. Always appreciate your enthusiasm. You're a very optimistic guy.
Oh, and one question. I guess Clemson's going to be number one tomorrow.
Clemson's number one already in the
Hey, that's why we do chicken right. That's why we went to Columbia. You guys take care.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, the Clemson is number one on the list, not in the AP poll, but the people that put out the, well, they've got a name for it. I can't think what it is. It's the one that's the important one, but they've got Clemson number one now, and they've got to play again. Well, there's several big games coming up, the Auburn-Georgia game.
Now, Bob Osmus is one of 10 who picked Wisconsin in the AP poll, according to Bob.
Yeah, I know. But
well, they're undefeated, and until they're beaten, I guess, you know, we'll make a decision after the Ohio State game, right?
Yeah, you'll have something.
I mean, if they beat Ohio State, wouldn't you rank them number one?
Well, be the only undefeated team, right?
Other than Central Florida, yeah.
Well, Central Florida is not being considered, though.
No.
That guy better get out of town and take his money. I'm not kidding you. What if he stays there next year? They win five games.
Well, you know, who knows what his talent level is next year, but he's playing against teams he's going to beat. I don't know their full schedule. I don't know their early season schedule. But in the conference, they're going to be. Although, they had a heck of a game. By the way, the game with South Florida was a battle. Went right down to the final final return. They broke the tie at the very end of the game with a kickoff return. All the way.
South Florida is pretty good, as we found out, right?
Yeah. Well, they only lost two games.
We're at 356-9397. You can text us at 351-5357. Let's talk a little of volleyball here. This is pretty important today that Illinois was among the eight Big Ten volleyball teams that qualified for the Division I volleyball championship. Dave Lone and I had been talking all week about, well, what did they take last year? I think they took a seven, and, oh, it might only be six this time, and it winds up with eight. And they have eight total in the Big Ten, but the Pac-10 has, is it the Pac-10 or the Pac-12 now?
Pac-12
now has nine teams in there. So the Illini play at Seattle. That's on Friday night at 7 o'clock against Hawaii. And we all know that Hawaii has terrific volleyball teams. The other game features number 8 Washington and LIU Brooklyn. Now, Washington beat Stanford just about a week ago in Seattle. Just the third loss for Stanford the entire season. They had lost to Penn State twice, once over at Huff. And one other time they lost to them as well. So Kevin Hamley's team comes in with three losses, two to Penn State and one to Washington. So the Illini volleyball team has a really tough draw there, but they're in the tournament and going to Seattle. And
so that basically means Washington is one of the top 16 teams, isn't that right?
Yeah, they're ranked number 8.
Okay, so that'll be tough, but I'll give Illinois credit. They've played hard. They've played good against good teams. They don't always win, but they battle.
Penn State is the number one seed in the entire tournament. Florida is 2, Stanford 3, and Kentucky 4. Now, some people are asking the question, Big Ten has 8 teams in it, and the Pac-12 has 9 teams in it, so that's 17 out of the 64 teams are from those two conferences. Why is it that the SEC has 2 teams in the top 4?
Well, because they've been able to beat everybody else in their league and ran up a good record, I would guess, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, Florida is a ranked number, and the one that really surprised everyone is Nebraska. They've lost one match all year long. They've led the nation in attendance. They've done everything possible, and they rank them number 5. And the reason this is important is if you're in the top 4, you can play all your games leading up to the final tournament at home. You can have the home court advantage. So Nebraska is going to have it for the first couple of rounds, but then they're going to have to go on the road.
Unless some of those top teams get upset, then they wouldn't be around to host, right? If you got beat in the regional, you wouldn't be available for the next round?
Well, I don't know. I assume they
would host anyway?
I assume they play the tournament there anyway.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Well, I don't. I mean, that would be a real mess to start
Well, you wouldn't want to, you'd be playing on, you would want your home team to be hosting. You'd want a home team at that site. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're not going to draw, Jim. People are not going to turn out to see other teams play as like they would their own team.
Yeah, I wonder how many people from Illinois will be going to Seattle. That's a long way, and that's expensive. And for those students who have traveled all over the Big Ten to watch the volleyball team are not going to be able to do it. I mean, that's...
Will this be Illinois' first appearance in Seattle since 89? I don't know. I don't know. We've probably had other events there.
We played some football there. I don't know. Was that after 89? We played Washington at Seattle. Remember sitting way up in that, that football stadium?
Overseeing the lake there?
Yeah, overseeing the lake where the people came to the game in their boats.
I was calling it a lake. Was it a lake or was that part of the Pacific Ocean?
I think that's a lake of some kind.
Okay.
But just quickly back to football. Associated Press puts Oklahoma number two behind Clemson. Wisconsin is third. Auburn fourth. Alabama has dropped to fifth. Sixth. Miami seventh. Ohio State is eighth. But in Penn State, 9th, TCU, 10th. But Ohio State, if they beat Wisconsin, they're still very much in the conversation.
What has happened to the Pac-12? Each year goes by, and we don't have anybody from there. Since Oregon was so red hot under Kelly.
Yeah.
Now Kelly's going to UCLA. How's that going to work?
Well,
he ought to get more talent there than he had at Oregon.
I would think so. A couple of weeks ago, Tom Izzo blasted his team when they lost to Duke. But last night, they dominated North Carolina for 40 minutes. And Roy Williams said after the game, the worst game that he can ever remember in the history of North Carolina basketball.
What's the slowest shooting percentage? Yeah. The lowest in history, they said. Now I'm thinking, what is history? When did history start? Because did they have a team in 1923 that shot lower? And would anybody know? When you say history, are we talking since World War II or since 1980? Or what are we talking about?
They should. There's a cutoff point there someplace where they should say modern history.
Yeah,
but I don't know.
We still don't know what that is, but we'd have a better idea.
But Tar Heels started the game averaging 21 points and 10 rebounds per game while connecting on, I'm talking about a fellow named Luke May, and 53% of his three-point attempts against Michigan State. He resembled a chilly December night because of the pressure of Michigan State. They never left him. It was length he hadn't encountered in Portland or during UNC's previous games this season. He missed all three of his three-point attempts, finished 3 for 13 for 8 points, and Bridges didn't play all that well either. He did play with his ankle injury. And
they moved him to power forward for a long segment in this game, and it worked out better. The reason he came back, as it was explained by Izzo, is that they intended to use the rookie Jackson, who's an outstanding freshman, at the power forward and move Bridges to the small forward, because this would be the position he would likely play in the NBA, and he would stick around another year for that reason. Mm-hmm. And here the next
now,
thing.
Now they've changed his position.
Well, they're going to do what's best for the team, right, at this point. Because he's here, and he's not going to be here after this year, so they can do anything they want.
We're at 356-9397. We take a break here at 10:25. Coming right back. Well, Brian Barnhart, you just told us that you're going to be on the road, and you're leaving today. You're going to Wake Forest, and the first of several games that will enable us to find out how good our basketball team is.
We'll learn some more for sure. I think Brad Underwood called it big boy basketball this week, is what he said. So, at Wake Forest, and they haven't started great this year. I mean, they started 0-3. They've won a couple of games since then.
They've lost some bad teams, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, the smaller, I don't know how good they or bad they are, but they're certainly not big-name teams.
Yeah, and part of that, we talked with Coach about a little bit. He said they're transitioning. They lost a key guy from last year, and they've been transitioning their offense, so that's some of it. But he figures they'll be ready for us, you know, tomorrow night. He knows Danny Manning pretty well, the head coach at Wake Forest. Then, of course, the trip up to Chicago, which is going to be a quasi-home game, I think, with all the Illini fans in the Chicago area that I think would be come out and be curious to see the team. And then, of course, Maryland coming in here Sunday. So all this by the time we meet here next week.
And Maryland playing well again. And Northwestern, some disappointed in the way that Northwestern, but it won't make any difference when they play Illinois.
No, it won't. They've got almost everybody back. And I know talking to Dave Bennett, they're just – I don't know what it is exactly. He couldn't put his finger on it. I think you guys talked to him on Saturday, Lauren, about the basketball team at Northwestern.
I don't know. I don't know what he said exactly, but I know they have very little depth in terms of they're playing their regulars a lot.
Right.
And those regulars have to come through. They're not going to get much help off the bench. But Illinois beat Northwestern twice last year when Northwestern went to the NCAA tournament. So Illinois should have some degree of confidence.
And I know the crowds up there for Northwestern, because it's off campus, haven't been great for their fans, because it's a pretty good trip for their students to get out to the arena there at Allstate Arena. So they haven't drawn well.
This says, Shannon Ryan says, the Wildcats need to buckle down on defense after allowing Creighton to shoot 51% and Texas Tech 60.4% losses. And Yellow Jackets, she's talking about Georgia Tech here in the challenge game. But, got to find out sometime.
Well, that's true. And the way they play, there are certain principles that, you know, they're very aggressive going to the basket. I think the last game, and I think it's still true, number one in the country in free throws made, Illinois is, through the number of games they've played. So when was the last time we said that? It's been a long time since that's happened. And the offensive rebounding is way up. So there's a lot of good things, principles you take on the road, regardless if it's home or road, that you hope will work, regardless of the competition.
Well, good luck. You guys will leave, late this afternoon?
Late this afternoon, yeah, for Winston-Salem. We're going right from the airport there to the arena for a shoot-around. And then we'll have another shoot-around tomorrow. So we haven't done that for a while either.
Well, at least you're not going to Durham.
Fairly close.
Teams that go to Durham are not going to have much fun.
Yeah, well, Duke. Duke is who they are.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, they're pretty good. But, yeah, it's one of those four schools, you know, in the what they call Tobacco Road, the big four there.
You mentioned Duke. Do you know in the last two games they've been way down double figures against Texas and Florida and came back and won both games close. One was overtime. So, I mean, Duke is really good, but as yet they're not just overwhelming. They're just good enough to win.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be better later.
Yeah, they will be.
Yes.
Come January,
yes, they will.
And get them all together. Anyway, news headlines with Brian Barnhart, and we'll come back after that with more of our Monday morning quarterbacking and take your calls right up until 11. And welcome back to our Monday morning quarterback session. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate here. We're at 356-9397. And our text line is 351-5357. Well, we got everybody all talked out here this morning. They don't know where to go. We don't know where to go either, because there's so many things going on. But Shannon Ryan brings us up to date on who's going to be in the Big Ten ACC Challenge and breakdown on the games, which is pretty interesting. For example, Wisconsin is 3-3 playing at Virginia, which is 6-0.
Well, Wisconsin's not the same team they were, Jim, I don't think. Do you? I mean, they got Haas at center, but, I mean, and they've got Iverson. They've got some players that have played, but this is a really revamped Wisconsin lineup. And I'm not sure and this is not Bo Ryan anymore. We'll just see if Greg Gard can do this with this team, then he's another Bo.
she goes on to say that their three losses, the Badgers' three losses, are against ranked opponents. So they,
okay.
Xavier, Baylor, and UCLA. So that makes quite a bit of difference.
Absolutely.
Let's go to Orville. Hello, Orville.
Okay, earlier you guys was talking about the fouls.
Yes, sir.
Called. Did you catch that UAB debacle?
What happened?
Well, they had a fight underneath the basket, and the UAB players come off the bench. They threw all of them out of the game.
You mean against Minnesota?
Yeah, and he ended up playing 5-on-3.
Yeah.
And
I thought it was Alabama. Was it
Minnesota.
UAB?
Excuse me?
It was Alabama, not UAB.
Oh, well, anyway, that's close.
They're
well,
both from
they're
Alabama.
Both from Alabama, yeah, you got that much.
But I just wondered if you guys caught that.
Well, I just saw a picture of the guys, the three-man zone that they played. And Jim, I think I read, and you told me that you read, that they actually outscored Minnesota at the end of the game.
Yeah, 22-14.
But Minnesota must have had a huge lead before that because Minnesota won the game.
Well, the coach from Minnesota said he didn't have a scheme set up for a three-man.
Well, really?
I bet he didn't.
But they had wide-open shots. Well, what more do you want?
And that freshman scored 40 points for Alabama.
Yeah.
Well, you get a lot of shots if you only have three players.
That's right.
Yeah, it's three steps and a shot. Okay, you guys have a good one.
Hey,
yeah,
appreciate the call.
That is a unique thing, to have three players for 9 minutes. That's amazing. And to outscore Minnesota. Minnesota's a good basketball team. I mean, I consider them the number two team in the conference. I don't know if that's true, but the one thing about Michigan State, which just stifled some of the teams defensively, because they're so big and strong around the back. You don't get any easy baskets against Michigan State normally. Minnesota's the same way. They got Lynch. He's one of the national leaders in block shots. I saw through the first four games, he had 26 blocks. And then you've got Purdue with those big people. Or you've got Haas. And Harms. This Harms had 5 blocks in one game. He's 7 foot. Mm-hmm. So when you have that, you can play better defense because you're not giving up layups. Illinois gave up more layups in that last game than you can ever beat anybody good. You can't win a game against a good team when you give the layups that Illinois allowed.
The part that bothered me is if you get beat out on the top, usually somebody comes over to help you or try to take a charge or something, but they had, I don't know how many, unmolested layups.
I know, it's driving me crazy. I'm thinking, man, oh, man, I know we're going to win this game because we're playing somebody that's not comparable, but the fact of the matter is, Illinois hit a bunch of threes in that game, Jim, in order to win.
Yeah, right at the beginning of the second half.
Right. That's when they opened up the lead.
Let's go to Mike. Hi, Mike.
Good morning, Jim and Lauren. This is Mike Martin. I never call in, but I am today only because today is the memorial service for a great Illini, Art Wyatt, who died about 10 days ago down in Florida. As you all know, and older listeners might know, Art played on the golf team in the late 40s, and then while he was in town for quite a lot of years and was on the faculty, he won the Twin City a couple of times and loved the Illini and has supported it through the years. And I think the reason Mike Small is the golf coach at Illinois is because Art had a terrific personal relationship with Mike and ultimately endowed the position for the head golf coach at Illinois. So Art was 90 and lived a full and great life, supported Illinois in so many ways, both in academics and athletics, and he's a loss to the Illini Nation, but he did it proud for a lot of years.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Mike. And, you know, this work that he did in the accounting department there, people just rave about it like no one has ever, had that kind of effect, particularly on students that he did.
Yeah, and I was one of them, and I probably...
Oh, no, I take back everything I said.
I ended up in Champaign because he steered me into a job with a local firm when I was a starving student, and then after 4 years in the Navy, got a chance to come back here. But he's been a dear friend for a lot of years. I had the privilege of going to Florida and spending several days with him every winter for about 20 years, and we really enjoyed playing golf together and spending time together. And
you say there's a service of some kind. Where is it?
There's a graveside service at 3:15 in the cemetery next to the football stadium. And then there's a memorial service at the Champaign Country Club that begins at 4.
Okay, thanks for the information. Appreciate it, Mike.
Okay, thanks. Thank you.
And let's go to Jeff. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, guys. How are you this morning?
We're good. How are you?
Good, good. I was going to go back to that Alabama-Minnesota game.
Okay.
I don't know if you saw the video, but there's a video out there of one of the Alabama guys shooting a free throw. And, of course, there's no Alabama players in the lane. But after he makes his free throw, he goes over and gives low fives to the nobody on both sides of the lane. It's hilarious. You really gotta look it up because it is really funny.
Well, you gotta give a high. You gotta give a low five to, after every free throw attempted, made or missed, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, you there's no one there. It's hilarious. So,
well,
anyway.
How a good part of it or just that?
No, just that. Just
oh, okay.
That. Yeah, I just saw that video.
I just like to know what they did on both. I know what they did on defense. They just had they played a 1-2 zone, a 1-2 zone,
or a 2-1.
I think they had a 1 and then 2. So
yeah.
But I don't know what they did on offense. They probably just passed that ball around. You know, a lot of people play. Three-on-three games for skill purposes, and that must have been what they did. It was amazing. How would you like to have been Minnesota if you had lost that game?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Well, try to find that video. It is really fun.
Okay, all right, thank you. We need to take a quick break here, Mr. Bond. We're going to, cut these up into two, and we'll take this one first and come right back. Welcome back to our Monday morning quarterback session. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate here. I'm surprised that nobody has called in about Bill Walton. That's all I heard last night from various people. I even had one guy to call me up on the phone and just was raving. I said, wait a minute, I had nothing to do with that. But He was saying that he had to turn it off, and I didn't hear it too much of it. But what I did hear was awful, and I'd heard Walton before, so I shouldn't be surprised. But Vitale's the worst, but Walton is coming up on him. He may catch him.
You know who has a lot of fun, but doesn't give you anything, is Bill Raftery. I love the guy.
Yeah,
he's a sweet guy. A nice guy, and I shouldn't say it, but when you listen to the game, he's got his gimmicks and he's got his stick, and that's what you get.
The best guys are Shulman and Billis. Those two guys have been over in Hawaii.
Billis is really good.
Billis is good, and Shulman's the best play-by-play guy there is.
Yeah,
I think in basketball.
How do you like Dokić?
I like him all right. He's good. I do like the commentary from time to time, but also I like color commentators that give you a little. Deion Thomas gives you more than some of those guys about what to look for and what happened on a certain play.
Yeah, Deion has been very good.
Let's go to Jim. Hi, Jim.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Just a couple questions. First. On the fumble by the end zone against the quarterback, it looked from the video board that his knee was down and he had possession of the ball.
I think it was so blurry you couldn't hardly tell. I think that they called it that way on the field and they didn't have enough to turn it. But I agree with you. I couldn't. I looked and looked at that thing on the replays. I saw about four replays and I thought he might be down, but I didn't feel like I could prove it.
Yeah.
When did the ball start coming out? You know, that's the question.
Yeah, I don't think it came out until after he landed. But
yeah.
Anyway, okay, the second thing is the offensive line. Do you think the offensive line coach, Butkus, is an effective coach?
I just don't know how to answer that. I mean, I haven't seen the ineptness of the team is such that I can't judge the coaches. Can you? I mean, I'm not trying. Butkus may be a terrific coach. Everything about him I like. I mean, I know, you know, what I know of him. I mean, but I just don't know whether the talent. When you play four freshmen in the offensive line, that is insanity. It's insanity. And the failure of Megenson to make it and the failure of Solomon to come through this year, I think, leaves them. I'm not saying they did the wrong thing in going with the freshman, but they decided real early to go with the future. And the future is a lot different from how good you're going to be this Saturday.
Yeah, okay. I just wondered about that. It's hard to even judge the quarterbacks without a good offensive line. So.
Yeah, I don't think you can judge anything until you get a good offense. You can't offensively, you say, well, we can't get the ball to the receivers. Well, the reason you can't is because Illinois has to bring the tight end in and maybe the other guy to block, and they only got a couple of guys going out, and then, you know, the other team can kind of concentrate on those. I don't know. I mean, when you can't run the ball, and you've got to have a balance there, and Illinois, I thought, was weak in both. I mean, those are great kickoff returns by Dre Brown. Those are terrific all the way to midfield, but as far as our running from the line of scrimmage, if you take out the first drive, which was very effective and impressive, and the quarterback keeping the ball fooled them a couple times, but after once they figured out what Illinois was doing, then Illinois never scored again.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, Fitzgerald said we made some adjustments.
Sure.
And what they decided was that that's the only two guys you need to worry about if we're running.
They had a spy on the quarterback after that first series. At least I don't know when it started, but there wasn't any. You know, he couldn't run as freely as he did early.
Let me catch up on the text here. The Big Ten Network has agreed to avoid images of Chief Leinenweck during its broadcast following a complaint by two misguided individuals about the showing of a Chief Leinenweck flag, during the Indiana game. What's next? Fans being banned from going to games wearing Chief Leinenweck sweatshirts and T-shirts because they may show up on camera? I hope you condemn this censorship. That's from Bill in San Jose, California.
I think we should ban the thought of Chief Leinenweck. You can't think about it.
Oh, okay. That'd be about the end of it, then, wouldn't it? Bill, you're exactly right. I harped on that last week quite a bit. And Professor Kaufman not only wants them to ban that showing it on television, they want somebody to go out in the parking lot and tell somebody to take that flag down. Oh, my goodness. Let's see. Oh, that we were talking about playing a football game and the coming to the game in boats. That's the Puget Sound.
Okay, thank you.
And that's a part of the, they're telling me.
Got my
this.
Geography wrong again.
No, it's a Puget Sound. It's an inlet from the Pacific Ocean.
Right. I understand.
Get our, is the running back from Gibson City on Lovey's radar, Mitch McNutt, the running back, the gentleman from Moreau mentioned, he may be bigger than many of the Big Ten running backs. He seems strong and athletic and at least worth a look. I have no idea if they're looking at him. We'll take our final break here and come back and have time to take another call or two. All right, we have a couple of minutes left here, so let's go quickly on the calls. This is Rich. Hi, Rich.
Hey, how you doing this morning, Jim?
Good. How are you, sir?
Just fine, thanks. Hey, I got an idea. I'm not a social media guy, but maybe we can enlist some help from our friends that who are into social media. Hey, what if we? What if as many Illini fans as possible wore Chief shirts or jackets or something to the game against Maryland on Sunday night? so that the Big Ten Network could not avoid showing our beloved chief.
I love that idea. I wish everybody would wear it.
You know, and if you don't have a shirt, just find the logo someplace, put it on a piece of paper or a cardboard, or you can, I'm not sure we can have banners, but maybe something that, anything to show the chief so that it cannot be avoided. I just think that that article in the News Gazette last week was informative, but kind of upsetting. It's the thought police, again, as you guys talked about.
Yeah, it really was. Thank you. Let's go to Eric. Eric, we're in the final minute.
Hi, guys. I missed the most of the show. I just I want to be a little bit of a realist here with the team and whatnot, and maybe you could fill me in. But I heard that the incoming recruiting class was ranked 65th in the country, and coincidentally, there's 65 teams in the Power 5 conferences. Is that what you're hearing, Lauren?
Well, that's where Rivals had them ranked, and Scouts, I think Scout had them 64th. So they're at the bottom of the they're at the bottom of the Big Ten, and they're, you know, they're that far down in national.
Gotta go, guys. Thanks for the call, and Mr. Tate, see you next Monday morning. Do more quarterbacking here on DWS in Champaign-Urbana.